This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Oh, it's pumping. It is pumping in the Love Sport studio. We are on the floor. We're doing our salsa. We are sidestepping. And I don't know what else we're doing, Paddy. What else are we doing, mate? We are loving life right now on Love Sport because it is the El Clasico fan show. Me, Matt Beadle, here with you for another 32 minutes this evening as we focus on the big two clubs in La Liga, a Barcelona and a Real Madrid. And first up, it is Barcelona returning from that international break with a trip to Leganés. Of course, just 6 points from 13 games for the hosts. It looks like it should be a relatively routine victory for the Catalan giants as they go to Leganés and then host Borussia Dortmund on Wednesday, which is the much bigger fixture in that group of death, of course, in the Champions League. What a massive, massive game this. Can we potentially conceive the fact that Barcelona might not get out of the group stages in the Champions League? Pah! Don't be absolutely absurd. That is surely never, never going to happen. We're going to get onto that game and we're going to get onto the Leganés game, but we're also going to focus on the fact that Lionel Messi now, since stats were collected by Opta in 2006. And when I say stats, I mean dribbling stats. Since they were first collected, Lionel Messi has completed, wait for it, drum roll please, 1,880 dribbles for Barcelona in that time. Not only is that incredible and leaves him top of the pile in those dribbling stats, it also makes him 660 ahead of his next competitor. That competitor, you won't be surprised to hear, is Eden Hazard. Now, he's managed that with Madrid, Chelsea and Lille. Messi, as we know, a one-club man, has done it only with Barcelona. In third place, it's Franck Ribéry. Next, it's Aguero, which actually surprises me. So you're going Lionel Messi, Eden Hazard, Franck Ribéry, Sergio Aguero, and then after Sergio Aguero, then you have Cristiano Ronaldo, 816. Incredible stats, that. Really, really incredible. It does surprise me, to be fair, that Wilf Zaha isn't on that list. But I suppose since 2006, it's taken him time. I would imagine in 5-6 years' time, Zaha will maybe flying pretty high on those particular stats. But no doubt Messi will continue. On the line now, we have Dan Hilton from the Barcelona podcast, as always. Dan, great to have you on. What do you make of those stats, Messi?
Yeah, what a high and low of an introduction there. First, you bring up the fact that you say never, ever, that Barcelona could be knocked out of the group stage. Don't say never, ever, ever. Particularly, so I think it says more about Dortmund and Inter Milan than it does about Barcelona. But as far as Messi's greatness, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the testament that should always be remembered is don't normalize what Messi does. Once we normalize it, and I think we get lost in the numbers and figures, because when you hear something, you don't recognize what it is. And when I say, when you think of how many more dribbles Messi has than everyone else and just the incredible things that he's done, I always think, what if you put those on whether you put it on a YouTube video or whatever it was, what if you actually watched video of the incredible thing he did, right? Like, I always say that when you talk about even the free kicks, watch all of Real Madrid's total team free kicks over the last 3 years and then watch the same number by Messi in that time, and you watch him in succession, and that's a little bit easier for you to understand just the magnitude of how great some of the things he's doing. And just not great, but unprecedented and incredible and different and special and magical. I want to save some adjectives for later on in our show, right?
Well, right, this is it, right? Because you can't quantify it. And we could talk about Messi every time we do this show, and we could fill the 15 minutes that we have. because there is so much to talk about Lionel Messi. And then we can go into Messi v Ronaldo and the boring debate that will just rumble on and never, ever be settled, because some people will always say Ronaldo, some people will always say Messi. You've got people in both of those camps. It's almost impossible to separate the two of them. But this is just another stat that comes out, and these stats are going to continue to roll out. I'm sure next week it'll do something else, or someone else will figure another stat that, just like you said, you can't normalize it. You never know what he's going to do, and it's just one of those where you kind of have to go, do you know what, we're putting him over here on this pedestal alongside Cristiano Ronaldo, and they are what they are. Let's just focus on everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, the key to separate Ronaldo and Messi people is you got to get those Ronaldo people out of your life. I think that would be the advice I would have from a host on the Barcelona podcast. But yeah, certainly. And I think what it's a self-fulfilling prophecy as well, that when we talk about the greatness of Messi, then what is the negative of that? The negative is that every time that Barcelona wind up coming up short, it's because they rely too much on Messi, or this Messi dependencia that exists. And I keep thinking this past week, with the retirement of David Villa, how David Villa was, not only is he the greatest forward that Spain has ever seen, and maybe not in terms of top-level talent, but the fact that he was so big in so many moments, and he was such an important part. When you talk about the Spains that are will always be in Spanish history and in world history as well, this monumental side that wins two Euros and one World Cup, he was the target forward. You talk about Raul, you talk about Morientes or Fernando Torres, all these different Spanish players that are legends in their own right. But David Villa was a legend at Valencia. He's a legend at Spain. I've been asking all week whether or not he was a legend for Barcelona, and he may not be, because he was only there for three seasons, 33 goals. It doesn't get it done when it comes to having your name put in the annals of history and on the record books. But his impact for the Barcelona sides under Pep Guardiola at the start of this decade were incredible. And he allowed Messi to be all-encompassing Messi. He allowed Messi to be the distributor that he is, the dribbler that he is, the scorer that he is. And I thought that while Luis Suarez is, in theory, the perfect complement, David Villa allowed Barcelona to be the perfect complement for Messi at that time, where they weren't reliant on Messi because they had so much talent at every position. But he so selflessly, that being Villa, so selflessly did his job and did what he had to do. And we've seen now between Dembele and Neymar, well, Neymar was his own thing, but whether it's Griezmann, Coutinho, and Dembele, let's say the three of them, learning that lesson that Villa learned and learning how to fit in alongside Messi. Now, granted, Villa got to do it under peak age of Messi, and these three are having to do it under an older Messi that defends a little less, presses less, does all those things a little less. But still, the point is that Villa selflessly wound up, I mean, he was, again, one of the greatest number nines that Spain has ever seen, and yet he goes on the wings very selflessly, chooses to play the way he did with Messi, and then Coutinho, Griezmann, Dembele, so many have struggled to do that very same thing.
It's interesting you mentioned David Villa, and we're going to get onto him, actually, because I want to talk about that and a couple of the points that you raised there, Dan. But of course, it is also the anniversary today. I'm sure you're well aware of this, and Barcelona have tweeted about it as well on Leo Messi, and the fact that hat-trick he scored against Sevilla back in 2014 to surpass Telmo Zarra and become the all-time leading scorer in the history of La Liga. That is the anniversary today. And then there's a whole bunch of stats since then, which are just incredible, really. I think one of them is if he hadn't even scored a single goal by the time he scored that goal, the goals he scored since would mean that he'd still be somewhere near the top 10, which is mad. His goal average before breaking that record was 0.87 goals per game. Since breaking the record, it's 1.02 goals per game. And also, since breaking the record as well, no other player has scored more goals in major European leagues. So that pretty much just breaks down just what a ridiculous alien of a footballer he is. But you mentioned David Villa there, Dan, and it's a hard one with Villa, because part of me just feels like he maybe doesn't get the recognition that he deserves. In some respects he does, and from Valencia fans, of course he will, you know, their top scorer in five consecutive seasons. Never the top scorer at Barcelona, of course. Lionel Messi was there, but remembered for moments like the El Clasico win in 2010, the 5-0. He was, you know, like you said, he was pivotal in that. And the fact that he is Spain's all-time leading scorer of 59 goals, he's got a host of accolades, a host of trophies. He's played across three or four continents. I mean, he's done so much in the game, but in terms of his recognition as a Barcelona player, probably not up there as much as perhaps it should be.
Well, yeah, I'll give you four. It is four continents. He played four matches total, two goals for Melbourne City on loan once, and obviously time in Vissel Kobe. So that makes it four continents in full. And, you know, I was speaking about this with a few other people, and you and I both being English speakers, and I also think about the TV rights and the broadcast rights and the availability of Spanish football content and when it became available, when he was starring for Valencia in the way that he was. I think we were actually deprived, being so much of the English-speaking world, of the greatness of David Villa. And I think when you speak to you speak to Spanish speakers and those who are from Spain, they actually hold him in even higher regard, and not just with the Spanish national team. I just mean with his Liga career as well. They remember him much more fondly. Again, I think he hit a global audience, and that's how the narrative now in 2019 is shaped, is these players, what were they to the global world? What were they on an international scale? And I just don't mean Spain. I just mean how their club is viewed on the international scope of things. And obviously Valencia have had some great moments in Europe as far as pedigree, but his Valencia sides didn't do that. So I do think that, not to say he's underrated because we understand his importance, but I think there's actually a difference between Spanish speakers and English players, and English speakers rather, and how we view David Villa's legacy.
Yeah, indeed. El Guaje, of course, the kid in Asturian, has made many a memory over the years in football, retiring this week. And like you said, some great memories there. Moving it back to the present, Dan. This week is a big one for Barcelona, of course. Bottom of the table, Leganés, so you'd imagine that one would come through without any particular hiccups, but one heck of a game on Wednesday coming up.
Yeah, against Dortmund, and having Barcelona at home at the Camp Nou, you said it, that it's almost impossible for Barcelona to wind up not progressing, but that's not true at all. I mean, they still have Dortmund, and they still have Inter at the San Siro after that. And so Barcelona are going to have to recollect. It's after the international break. That's always one of my worries, and I think most Culés' worries, that the international break is going to lead them to some difficult matches. And you look at the center back and outside back situation at the moment. Lenglet just ruled out of the Leganés clash with the calf injury. And then you see that Danny Moore and Moussa Vague, who hasn't been seen at all, could be playing important roles for in that match against Leganés. And who knows what happens after that, as well as Araujo being called in. And it's funny, when I almost take it day by day with Barcelona news, because there's so much that's come out in the international break. And as I've spoken about before, that some that you have to take with credence and some that you kind of discard. And for me, I'm still trying to figure out before Leganés, looking through this whole thing about Araujo getting called up and Todibo should be in the squad. But now apparently Barcelona is just going to take this teenage center back, and they're going to take Piqué, who's on his not that he's on his last legs, but how much longer does Gerard Piqué have? And that's by his choice, even in his footballing career. He seems to have so many other interests at the moment. And so they're going to sell Todibo at a reduced price for Leverkusen, because he's only played four matches in now 2 years. So it's funny to me that, as I was thinking, again, we try to be positive. I get excited about Barcelona playing against Leganés. I get excited about them playing against Dortmund. But yet in the background, there's always this harbinger of doom that reminds you of what the future might hold if Barca, as they do, continue to go all in, put all their chips on the present time. And for as exciting as Ansu Fati is, and Pedri, who we saw at the U-17 World Cup with Spain, who's with Las Palmas this year and will be moving over to Barca B next year, for as bright as certain parts of the future are, I just feel as if Barca continues to shoot themselves in the own foot. Or what is it they say? They say you cut off your nose in spite of your face. And
that's,
I feel like
one,
that's what Barcelona are doing at times when it comes to their management. And it's not that Todibo, maybe he's not progressing in the right ways, but it's not that I blame the board or Valverde. It's just poor planning by everybody, by Abidal and by Valverde and by the board and everybody involved. Because obviously Araujo, who Valverde is said to like, he obviously likes Araujo because Araujo gets games at Barcelona B. And at the age of 20, is still improved and has made improvements. Todibo came when he was 18 years old and has played four matches. And now he's almost a 20-year-old, and he barely gets any time. He doesn't play any, not only first-team football, but he doesn't play any professional football.
You mentioned Gerard Piqué there as well, Dan, by the way. I just want to very quickly pull you up on that. Is there now a sense of, ill feeling's not the right term, because I don't think there would ever be that to Gerard Piqué, but is there a sense that maybe he's not as focused as he has been in recent years? Like you said there, you alluded to the many off-field projects, I suppose you could say, he's got going on. Is it possible that his focus has just slightly waned in recent years? Because this is a player as well, by the way, who's been there and done it and won everything that you could possibly win in football. So is he now at a stage where he's coming to the end of his career, like you said, and maybe his application perhaps isn't what is 100% required to be a full-time Barcelona centre-back?
Right. It is more petty frustration than it is contempt. I don't think Koulet could ever completely turn on Piqué, but there certainly is frustration in the way that, the narrative is that there is some corrosion of the Barcelona veterans and what's happening in the club. And that's why, again, a guy like Todibo, how is he going to get a shot if Piqué, not that Piqué is demanding game time or playing time, but there is something certainly guaranteed with the old guard at Barcelona and with a manager like Valverde that's not going to shuffle things up and he's not going to punish Piqué for his, we'll say, extracurricular activities that I think, personally, I looked at him last year and look at him this year. I think some of those extracurricular activities that are a little more publicized are taking an effect on his play on the field. And really, that's the only line for me. I mean, he could do whatever he'd like. He can get as much sleep as he'd like. There are, as I mentioned, I believe it was even last week, where Lazo Kubala, when it comes to Barcelona history, had the biggest reputation, where he got Helenio Herrera, one of the great minds of football, got him fired back in the 1960, because Kubala was constantly out at night into the longest hours and doing God knows what with God knows who, and yet Kubala would show up at that time, would show up still for matches and be the best player on the field by a large margin. And the way that football works, the way that we understand the human body now, the way we understand mind and sleep and the importance of nutrition, footballing just doesn't work like that. You can't just be the best as Piqué is. You can't just be a legend and show up and still be the best. There has to be, you have to do your job on the back end. And my only frustration comes when Piqué shows up to the field and doesn't seem to have his best, and Barca's results seem to suffer for that. And that's where, again, it's not resentment. You're right. He's done enough to basically forever get a mulligan. But at some point, as I said, you have to continue to look for the future. And if that means we're not going to put the blame on Piqué, then you have to blame the manager for not taking more chances and making those kind of players accountable. And then you blame the board as well for setting up a team in a situation and not being honest when it comes to contracts and situations. It seems like Rakitic is the only player they're honest with.
Yeah. Just to quickly discuss the game on Saturday, of course, 22 goals conceded by Leganés so far this season. They've sort of transitioned, I suppose, to a more 5-4-1 in recent weeks. What do you think Valverde will do with his Barcelona team, and how do you think he'll set them up? Of course, we've had the international break as well. Is any part of you concerned as well? You are the man with the stats all the time, Dan. In terms of Barcelona coming back from international breaks, does it seem like there's often a hangover from that?
Well, there is, and I don't think they had to deal with that in October. They actually came back quite well from that. But this one comes in the fact, as I mentioned, with injuries. Lenglet, Alba, Roberto, and Semedo all look to be out of that fixture. That means, is there any other options? How does Wage not start in that situation unless Valverde has another ace up his sleeve? But I am concerned for Barcelona about their back line. It's not even rotation. It's just who do they have available and healthy to be able to defend, which has seemed to be part of Barcelona's issues this season. But for Leganés, and I think Terry Gibson actually had a great point about this on the Spanish Football Podcast. And while I say you should listen to the Barcelona podcast, I would also say listen to Spanish Football Podcast is Sidlow. I meant La Liga Weekly. There it is. So Terry Gibson had a great point about on La Liga Weekly that Leganés and a lot of these teams now, whether it's Osasuna, Eibar, all these smaller teams in the Liga, they don't really blood their own players. They're not bringing up these young, youthful players. They're bringing up guys that are going to hit you, that are physical, that know La Liga and are trying to survive the first division. And that's the way that Leganés and all these smaller clubs have almost changed. And there's a player in Braithwaite that is always good against Barcelona. And I think there are certainly some pieces and some tools there. And don't forget about Roch Mesa. He's still just 30 years old, even though it seems like he's been around for 100 years. And then Cesri, who's the very, very tall, not sure exactly how tall, but a Moroccan striker that doesn't play the full 90, usually comes off the bench, or if he gets a start, he gets subbed out. But he's certainly a player when I talk about the depletion of the back line, and particularly Lenglet not being able to play. He's a guy I'm worrying about just because he towers over everybody else. And I'm a little worried that our makeshift back line is not going to be able to communicate well to cut him out.
Interesting. Dan, always great to speak to you. No doubt We'll be back next Friday as you reflect on the two games this week and look ahead to the big one against Atletico Madrid, of course, next weekend. Dan Hilton of the Barcelona podcast, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
This has been the Barcelona section of the El Clasico fan show here on Love Sport. Next up, it's Real Madrid.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
The El Clasico fan show on Love Sport. Now it is time to talk Madrid. And I've got a feeling that one man and one man only, not only, we're going to branch out in this particular section of the show, but we are going to speak heavily about one particular individual, and that is a man who spearheaded his country's campaign to Euro 2020. And this week on the line is Matt Wiltsey. Matt Wiltsey didn't do that. He didn't spearhead any country to a Euro 2020 campaign. However, he is on the line from managing Madrid. Matt, great to have you on. We've got to discuss yet again Mr. Gareth Bale, and before you come in, I've just got to say one thing. Wales, golf, Madrid, in that order. Talk to me.
Oof. Oh, man. All right. So, opinion has been divided amongst Madridistas. And so, I'll tell you, half of Madrid fans really feel that what Gareth Bale did was wrong, and half of Madrid fans feel, hey, he's just poking a bit of fun, getting back at the Spanish media who's had a campaign against him. What I will say is, and I'll preface this by saying that my opinion obviously doesn't go for all Madrid fans, but I feel that he probably went a bit too far on this one. And it, whether or not he intended it or not, he's mocking the club. And I get it. I get he's frustrated. I get the fact that the Spanish media have just been after him relentlessly. But I wouldn't have held up. He's just adding fuel to the fire. And what I would have done differently is I would have directly mocked the media rather than kind of mocking Real Madrid. And so if I were Gareth Bale, maybe I reach out to The Guardian and have Sid Lowe interview me in Spanish and speak in Spanish, since I've been accused of not being able to speak Spanish. Or maybe I go out to a late dinner with Thibaut Courtois after he said that I didn't go out to the late team meal. Or I invite the whole squad out to do a mini golf. And just it kind of jibe, do little jibes like that to get back at the media rather than kind of holding this flag up and mocking Real Madrid.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Matt, to be fair. And listen, at some stage, people might go, well, do you know what? Maybe he's had enough. Maybe it is time for these players to bite back, and maybe they shouldn't have to bite their lip all the time. But he could have been a bit smarter about it, couldn't he? And I think, like you said, holding that up, and listen, the picture doesn't help. It's there with him behind the flag laughing. And I know the remarks were inspired to a sense by Mijatovic. I know that he's the one that sort of alluded to that, and then that's why Wales fans cottoned onto it. It's not something that's been coined by Gareth Bale, but he's endorsed it in a way. And I think that if you wanted to endear yourself any less to Madridistas, You've just massively done that now. I personally can't really see how there is any return for him. Yes, he'll continue to play for the club, but I would imagine when he steps out against Sociedad, he's been named in the squad, there might just be a few boos.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's going to get... it's going to be interesting, because I think it may be one of the most emphatic just whistles and boos and you name it that we've seen for a Real Madrid player at the Bernabeu for a very long time. I think he just added way too much fuel to the fire. I mean, my opinion is probably more prevalent in Spain than it is outside of Spain. And so I think he's really going to hear those whistles.
And Zidane has been, I guess Zidane's been pretty good on it. He wasn't particularly good at the start of the season with all the things that he said about Gareth Bale, but he's since said, look, there's been a lot of noise over it. In the end, the important thing for me as a coach and for him as a player is to just focus on the football. Everyone's got an opinion, everyone's got their thoughts, but it's already gone too far. So let's just get back to talking about Madrid.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of what everyone was waiting for, right? I think we're all waiting to see what Real Madrid would say, and specifically what Zidane would say and what Zidane would do. And he had two key actions today alone. His pre-match presser where, like you said, he just kind of said, let's get on with it, let's move on. He didn't really, even though eight of the questions were about Gareth Bale, he really kind of brushed it aside. And then two, Gareth Bale was named in the match day squad. So we would have learned a lot more if, one, he was just excluded altogether, and two, if Zidane said, hey, this just was unacceptable. But Zidane's kind of moved, brushed it to the side, and I would not be surprised if Gareth starts tomorrow, or even I would be surprised if he doesn't play any minutes, and so we likely will see the wrath of the Bernabeu.
Wow. And it is Sociedad, like you said, two defeats last season, 3-1 at their place, 2-0 at the Bernabeu, a surprise defeat, you'd obviously say at the time. Bale is in, Vinicius is not in, so that's another reason that Madridistas might get a little bit angsty. But also, Lucas Vazquez, I just want to very quickly touch on him because he's out. He's been diagnosed with what you'd call a distal phalanx in his left hallux. I think I've got that just about right. Not entirely sure exactly what that is. I think it's an ankle injury, I might be wrong, but he's out now. So with regards to Vazquez and the future of him at Madrid, what can you see, especially with the young players coming through? Do you think this is maybe the beginning of the end for him?
You know, it's tough because if you ask a lot of fans have been kind of hoping it's the beginning of the end for Vazquez, and I think that's a little unfair. He's been a soldier, he's been one of those, he's a two-way player, he works extremely hard, he's always there for the manager, and he's a good squad player to have around, but at the same time, I get it from some fans' perspective because they feel he's holding back the likes of Rodrigo. He's holding back the likes of Vinicius, even Brahim, who we barely gotten to see this year and was phenomenal at the tail end of last season. And then you got Odegaard coming back eventually, and he can play on the right wing as well as in the middle. And you've just got all these young talents, Kubo at Mallorca. So all these young talents that play in the same position as him. And so I think fans just get frustrated that he's holding the team back. But, I mean, Zidane loves him. Every manager that's been through the club in recent years has loved him. And so there's a reason for it. And I think he is a good soldier. And I think it's too early to write off Lucas Vazquez, although I would admit I wouldn't be terribly upset if it were time to kind of eventually part ways with him.
Okay, Matt, mate, it's been great having you on. Just before you go, of course, it is Sociedad at the weekend, the return from the international break. How do you think this one's going to go?
Oof, well, I'll say this. I think this is going to be a really, really tasty game. Like I mentioned his name before already, Martin Odegaard will be returning to the Bernabeu. He's been probably one of La Liga's best players. It's going to be good. I think it's going to be tight, but I think Madrid's good form kind of gives them the edge, and I think they'll come away with a 2-0 win.
Lovely. 2-0 to Madrid. Matt Wiltsey from Managing Madrid, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Look forward to chatting to him next week as we review that game. And, of course, Martin Odegaard returning to the Bernabeu. Big one there, of course. Karim Benzema as well, signing a contract extension until 2023. Interestingly, Eden Hazard came out this week and said, having played with him for the last 3 or 4 months, he thinks Benzema is the world's greatest striker. Eden Hazard saying Karim Benzema is the world's greatest striker. El Clasico fan show here on Love Sport. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.